straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 172, brought to you by Hook'em.com and our good friend at Bud Light. My name is Cedric Golden. I'm joined by the Duck, Kirk Bowles. And Duck, our planet is ever-changing. At the time of this recording, it is Thursday. We've done a lot of other stuff with LaFonso Ellis and Texas softball coach Mike White, but the coronavirus demanded that we have to update our listenership, sir.
Absolutely. And the sports world for now is on hold. And there's no segment of the globe that is untouched by this coronavirus pandemic. And obviously the sports world is a part of that. So, you know, it too has to react. And it's comforting at least to see, you know, experts and the authorities, administrators and officials doing the right thing by canceling all these conference basketball tournaments and other events.
You're right, man. And just a quick update as of Thursday afternoon, 13 NCAA conference tournaments have been canceled, including the SEC, Big 12, Big 10, Pac-12, ACC, Big East, Big West. So, La Liga Soccer suspended for 2 days amid 2,000 confirmed cases of the coronavirus. MLS Soccer suspended for 30 days. And, of course, the big one coming out Wednesday night, the NBA season was suspended. Duck, I do believe that the NBA was the big leader in all of this. And once again, Adam Silver showing his stripes. He has got the chops. I think he might be the best commissioner in all of team sports.
Well, I think he probably is. And I think the one thing that triggered all this was the NBA reacting to a positive test of Rudy Gobert and since of Donovan Williams. So, you know, it's the only sport that we know that has athletes, I guess, outside of world soccer that have had athletes test positive for the coronavirus. And so this thing is just deadly, and it needs to be treated with all seriousness. And it's like I said, it is comforting to see other people take the NBA's lead. And I know Major League Baseball has now decided to suspend all operations, and the NFL was close behind with their facilities and drafting and scouts, and just everything's kind of put on hold, Sid.
It is, Duck, and it's really strange. This is our time of year where there's so much going on, and there are story ideas and columns just falling from the sky, and it's like the whole world has come to a halt. And unlike 9/11, Duck, when our country was attacked, sports served as an escape for the fans, and people were able to come together through sports that they love. So now we're talking about something that's a public health scare, and that's a whole different set of rules, brother.
It's a different kind of fear. You know, back then in 2001, we felt like we might be under attack, and we didn't know, you know, when the next shoe would drop. But this, as you said, this is about public health and safety. And I saw an interview this morning where after the SEC basketball tournament was canceled, they were interviewing Rick Barnes, the former Longhorn coach now at Tennessee. He said his players were scared to death.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this said is about managing fear and trusting our authorities and experts. And we can't lose sight of that. And, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people are probably panicking, and we don't want to encourage panic. We want to encourage taking precautions, and this is such a fluid situation, and these are life impacting decisions, and sports is just a small fragment of this. And I'm glad to see as you are, the authorities taking the proper steps and saying, this isn't about sports right now. This is about life and protecting life. And it's just very, very serious.
And when you look at the games are not as important as the safety
right.
of the players, of the coaches, of the refs, of the fans, of the administrators, of the stadium workers, those people that toil for not as much pay. So to that end, people that we respect, Kirk, people like Jay Billis and Charles Barkley and Jay Williams, they're calling for the NCAA to cancel the NCAA tournament and just put that on hold until they can get this thing corralled. I am 100% in agreement with them. I don't like the idea of playing tournaments with no fans in the stands because what you're still doing is you're still putting the people that are participating at risk. I know there's a lot of money at stake here. I know the TV viewership would be through the roof. This thing is bigger than money, Doug. They got to do the right thing. And I know right now, as of Thursday afternoon, they haven't done it. And this podcast is fluid. This is a fluid situation. And we're going to run interviews with Alfonso Ellis and Mike White that may have elements that are outdated. But we think that you want to hear their voices anyway. But as far as this tournament's concerned, Doug, I really think they should pull the plug.
And I understand that, and I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way. We both definitely agree that this should not be driven by economics. And even though, you know, this involves a lot of money, but it involves a lot of lives, and that's where the priority, you know, has to be. You know, personally, I guess I don't mind them postponing it for now because we don't know what that means. We don't know if that means for a week or 2 weeks or even a month. And, you know, these authorities have to juggle all these factors, and front and center has to be health and safety. And like you said, it's not just the athletes and the coaches, but support staff and trainers and ball boys and stadium workers and vending people. It's just so many lives that are touched and impacted by this. So, you know, it won't shock me if they cancel the NCAA tournament. It won't. But I don't know if, you know, to me it's imperative they cancel it today. You know, hopefully we're going to make strides. You saw the Utah Jazz. Supposedly they had 58 people tested for the coronavirus after Rudy Gobert tested positive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been a big mystery on test kits. And are we getting enough test kits? Are there enough? And then you see an NBA team gets 58 right off the bat if those published reports are true. So, you know, I'm with you. I mean, public health has to come first, and it won't shock me at all. And as far as the NBA goes, you know, there's talk of when it comes back, and I trust everything is going to be normal. This is the new normal for now. And maybe they would just dispense with the rest of the regular season and go straight to the playoffs. There's just so many layers to this thing, Cedric, and it's just, you know, it's very scary, it's very surreal. And to me, the most important thing is we all come together and support one another right now.
This thing is not going away anytime soon, and it's just hovering over, not over our country, but over the world.
And it is.
When is the last time we've said that something this potent? And when you look at it, Duck, livelihoods are being affected. I know, and my heart goes out to the people who have died from it and to the people who are afflicted with it today. We all know some people. Or know some people who know some people who are self-quarantined and what have you. But when you start thinking about, man, how people are missing out on things. We have our ex-coworker, James Wangelman. His son was getting ready to go to Disney. He's a member of the Austin High Band. They called it off, and everybody was already packed. The kids are broken.
I don't know anybody that wants to go to Disney right now or on a cruise.
Mm-mm. You just don't.
I mean, want to be in the crowd. Now, let me ask you, what do you think of empty arenas? And, you know, the governor of Ohio wants empty arenas for the play-in games and the regional in Dayton. What's your opinion?
I just think it would be like a funeral where no one showed up. And it's just going to be glum. It's going to be a controlled scrimmage. Could you imagine just two benches and refs?
I wonder if they pipe in music or pipe in crowd noise or something.
I don't know if you pipe in anything. Do you even televise it?
Oh, yeah.
Who wants to see it? They're going to televise it.
Everybody wants to see it.
TV contracts, but... what's March? That takes the madness out of March Madness.
But you're
not
diffusing or deflating the interest. Interest will be there.
The interest will be there, but it'll be muted interest. It'll be blunted interest because there's not as much emotion that's being poured out. I love those buzzer beaters. I love those fans going nuts.
So TV ratings will probably be even greater.
They are.
Because more people are working from home.
And no one's going to those games.
Well, sure.
They're going to be watching at home.
Not allowed. So.
And man, it just breaks my heart to see the Houston Rodeo gets canceled. And Austin Rodeo at the time of this taping, we expect it to be canceled. The mayor of Austin has said you can't have an event of over 2,500 people without getting clearance from us.
Well, there's still no word on any changes for the WGC Dell match play coming up in 2 weeks.
That's a huge deal.
Austin Country Club.
10,000 fans walking around.
Well, 15,000. They upped it to 15,000
this year
for the first 3 days.
Oh, wow.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, which you know is the Tiger effect. You know,
if he shows.
So, well, yeah. But, I mean, obviously he's qualified. He's like a 10th in the world. But, you know, I had dinner with some friends just this week, last night, and we were talking maybe they would have that and not let the gallery in. So, and just, it'd be just like the basketball.
Just a glorified practice
round. But at least in golf, you're supposed to be quiet when they're swinging. So
they're going to be like, oh my God, we don't need those guys with the signs.
Yeah, I know it. But it'd be very interesting, very sterile atmosphere, and you just don't know how the players would feel about that. You know, you have a Royce Ham monster dunk, and you don't hear anything.
Do you
except your own bench?
No, you hear Shaka going, you know? Ah, save my job.
So yeah, we're going to hear the coaches coach a lot more.
You hear Shaka over there.
That would be interesting because you know we don't get to hear the coaches very much.
Especially where we sit,
that would come through loud and clear on TV. So I don't think you can be overly cautious when people are dying. When you have that many people that are sick, and nearly everybody is saying it's going to get worse before it gets better.
It is, and
you know, it's incubating. People were coming back, and you know, they're probably because we haven't tested that many people in this country.
We better get started.
But when you see, you know, 168 people in Italy die in one day, and 97 die the year before, this is a serious global pandemic.
You know what? And I was at the movies last week. Went to see the Affleck flick. Give it seven ducks. It was good. It was called The Way Back. Really good. I go into the restroom afterwards, and there's a guy in there ducking, and he's finishing up as I'm starting at the urinal, and not trying to be too graphic here.
You may be going too far.
No, I'm not. People use the bathroom duck. That's a fact of life. And so I'm using the restroom, and number one. And so I listen. He finishes, and I listen for the water in the sink. And all I hear is that door closing.
Mm-hmm.
If you got relatives out there that aren't washing their hands, and this is a PSA, get them to wash their nasty hands. Boil your hands. If you got a relative that doesn't wash their hands, I wouldn't go over to that house. That's not a place you need to be.
But tell me you weren't surprised.
I wasn't, Duck, but you know, but if you would, to me, if what I took away from it, and I told my wife, I go, well, if he's not washing his hands now, he's never washed his hands. I get
never,
that.
Never.
But then I walk outside and I see him walking out of the theater hand in hand with his wife, and I told Bev, and Bev goes, she knows who she married.
Did she?
No.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Would she be holding hands if she knew he doesn't wash?
But, she married him, Duck.
You know.
She married him. She's been with him. She knows him.
Well, then
no one knows Kirk Bowles better than Vicky Bowles. No one knows Cedric Golden better than Beverly Golden.
Well, they know we wash our hands.
They know that
always,
much about us. Yes, they do.
You know, and that is disgusting. But, you know, a lot of people are disgusting, especially us men, you know.
We're a dirty species.
And
we're dirty.
It's just sad. And, you know, you would hope the vaccine is going to come sooner than later. and you hope most people are gonna be smarter about it. But I can't imagine how this is gonna affect the entire country, the entire world, with, you know, just so you're talking about Disney World. Who's in Disney World today?
How many
people? I'd love to know how many people are in Disney World today.
That's a really good question.
You know, I bet their numbers are just categorically in the toilet, to use your bathroom humor.
I think that sporting events are probably down as well.
Yeah,
events
so
overall. I mean, and you start looking at life. You know, we've got Bev and I planned a Vegas trip for later in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
There's a comedy show coming up in a couple of weeks downtown at ACL we want to go to, and that holds 2,700 people. Well, that may get canceled. We don't know. This thing is I just think it might be just the tip of the iceberg. I think it might be getting worse way before it gets any better.
It might, and I kind of take my cue from what the track coach, Adric Floreal of Texas, said yesterday when was interviewing him. He said, I'm not one of those guys that freaks out in my room in fear. And Carol Capitani, the women's swimming coach, said, I don't do panic, you know. And you can be smart without panicking.
I love that.
And I realize that, and that's kind of the way I feel. Now, if five people tested in Travis County, you know, that might be a little different. I think that's when it hits home, when it hits your community, like a New Rochelle outside of New York.
Because we haven't gotten that. We haven't got that yet.
And it'd be almost unimaginable to think we're going to be able to escape that.
We can't. Austin, people come to visit.
Yeah.
People love Austin.
It's a destination city.
This is not a one-horse town where they don't get like five visitors a month.
Yeah.
We probably get 50 to 100,000 visitors a day.
You know.
And that's probably on the conservative side.
Right. So it'd be interesting, too, how it shapes our lives going forward, because I think you're like me. You believe there's going to be an end to this. It's not going to be a world catastrophic where you're seeing hundreds of thousands die, you know.
I don't think it's a bubonic plague.
But, people are worried. People aren't panic-stricken yet, I don't think, but people are worried and concerned, as they should be.
Especially people like us. We're in that high-risk group, bro.
Yeah, we are.
On Second Thought.
Just be safe out there. This is a safety issue, and it's something that's not going away anytime soon. We'll be all over it in the coming weeks on statesman.com and on this podcast. But for now, Doug, let's go to our interview with LaFonso Ellis.
And Kirk, man, we've had some great broadcasting greats, great analysts on. This guy is one of my favorites. ESPN analyst LaFonso Ellis, Notre Dame legend, joins us. Fonz, how are you, sir?
I am well, gentlemen. How are you guys today?
Oh, we're doing good. We're both fans of yours. These are uncharted waters, aren't they? We don't know what this is going to look like, do we?
No, we don't. We don't. And obviously, we don't have really a context for it. We were talking the other day just about the Ebola virus when that kind of showed up in the last several years. And most people felt that it was quarantined. And so there wasn't this national almost panic. And so, you know, you see both sides of it. You talk to some doctors, and some doctors say that we absolutely need to be careful with it. And then you have other doctors that say, you got to be careful with it, but people are overreacting and creating kind of a panic scenario. And so it's really unfortunate. And that's typically what happens when something new comes along. Everyone gets so fearful because, of course, it could bring harm and hurt to those whose immune systems, lungs, et cetera, are compromised.
You know, LaFonso, as a kid, I know you grew up watching the tournament, and then you were fortunate enough to play in two for the legendary Digger Phelps at Notre Dame. What are your emotions? Because you've seen this tournament as a player, as a fan, and now as an analyst. We know you love the game. How big of an emotional struggle is this for someone that's been so close to college basketball for his full life?
When you say that, do you mean from the standpoint of Mark Emmert and the committee saying that the fans are not going to be there, but the games are going to be played on. Do you mean it from that standpoint?
Absolutely, because you played in front of packed houses for 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a player who fed off the energy of the fans, whether it was at home games and they were rooting for me, or on the road when they were cheering against me, I really fed off of all of that energy in the building. And to now have to play in an empty arena, that would be something that I have to adjust to early. But what it ends up coming down to, I've made a commitment to my teammates, those guys wearing the same jerseys, my coaching staff, and just the thrill of competition. Those three things would take over, and I would go out there and give the very best performance that I could for those three people that I just spoke of.
You know, LaFonso, as you know, having played and followed the tournament, those early round games, they're kind of a nirvana for these underdogs, these you know, mid-major teams that maybe punch their ticket in their conference tournament, you know, and the crowds historically kind of get behind that underdog and almost will the upset. So I wondered if maybe their chances may get lessened because some of the emotion is going to be taken out of these buildings.
Yeah, I think early on, that's a great point. I think early on in the game, in the early maybe 4 to 8 minutes or so, that could be true. In the last 8 minutes or so, you've already gotten a feel for your opponent, and now skill and the energy that you're able to generate amongst each other becomes paramount. And so those teams that are very connected and genuinely cheer for one another out there on the floor and want to see individual success because the individual success impacts the team success, and they're genuinely rooting and cheering for their teammates, I think now those teams have an advantage. And I see that a lot, of course, in the first four teams that you just spoke of.
Well, LaFonso, looking at the tournament itself, Joey Brackett, your colleague, has six Big 12 teams in. Kansas and Baylor are top that list. What's the perception of the Big 12 from your national viewpoint?
Did you ask which of those teams, or forgive
just
me?
As the conference.
As the league as
the
a whole.
The conference as a whole. Is the Big 12 deserving of six spots?
Here's the problem. Here's the problem that we have, right? With the ACC being down this year and only going to get in four, five teams at the very most. I mean, those picks have to come from somewhere else. And unfortunately, it's not going to be one of those years where we're going to end up having those conferences. Those teams come from the smaller conferences. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to see some of the Power Six conferences have anywhere from 2 to 4 teams that we all kind of look at and kind of go, man, that's a head scratcher. I don't know how they getting into the NCAA tournament. So this is just one of those funky years. And if I look down and I see Oklahoma, a Texas in, someone like that, it'd be a little bit of a head scratcher. But when you compare it to just the overall landscape of college basketball, and that's many of the major conferences being a little bit down outside of the Big East, outside of the Big Ten, then you say, okay, I can understand why they're in this year.
What's your sense of shock? We're all shocked to believe it, that, you know, he hadn't done better. This is year five. He's missed two NCAA tournaments, been to two, and hadn't won a game yet. What's your national perception, and how do you see, you know, what's going on here?
Sure. Yeah. No, I love Shaka as a person. I even love him as a coach. Yeah. The one thing that I've harped on over the last 4 or 5 years, I've been surprised that he hasn't taken his same style from VCU, that same havoc style, getting up in the teams and forcing them in turnovers, getting the fans involved in that deal. He's not applied that at Texas, and I'm not sure. Now, obviously, he's lost several players to the NBA over time, and that kind of messes with your continuity a bit. But that's been my big question, is why hasn't he been willing to take that same havoc style from VCU to Texas?
You know what, Fonza, it's strange, because with all the injuries they've had, he's had to revert back to that. And the guys that have kind of helped spur this winning streak before the collapse versus OSU are havoc-type guys. Royce Ham, Brock Cunningham. So havoc has worked for him. I believe in my heart that he's probably regretful not having displayed this havoc, even though if you had a Mo Bamba or a Jackson Hayes, and it might be too late for him. But do you think if it doesn't work out for him here, do you think Shaka emerges somewhere else like a mid-major and goes back to havoc?
Yeah, I think there's no question about it, because that's really his identity. I mean, finding good kids who are good students who really are aggressive and get after the basketball. And there's no question about it. I mean, should Texas not have him back, his name's big enough, he's accomplished enough that some team would be more than happy to pick him up. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if he reverted back to what created successful in the begin with, which is that havoc style.
If you're looking at the tournament, how many teams do you think realistically have a shot to win it all, Alfonso?
As I look at the tournament, I think there's probably nine. I think there's nine teams that can legitimately win it: Kansas, Gonzaga, Baylor, Dayton, Duke, San Diego State, Louisville. And I tell you, a team that initially, as I watched them throughout the balance of the season, that I was kind of like, "Nah." I know we were talking about that they were the number one team coming into the college basketball season,
Michigan
and they've
State.
Had some issues. But Michigan State, but now all of a sudden, Michigan State is guys outside of Xavier Tillman and Cassius Winston are now all of a sudden emerging, and not only on the defensive end, but on the offensive end and making plays. Aaron Henry has been really good. Not only with his scoring, but being a playmaker as well. I think he's got six assists over the last two games and zero turnovers. Rocket Watts has emerged as another guy who can get them buckets, another really good defender. And so now all of a sudden I look at this team with Xavier Tillman, his ability on the interior to score on the offensive end, and he is one of the best post defenders in the nation. And we know what Cassius Winston is. I mean, Cassius Winston is just a monster at the point guard position, pushes the ball quickly and transition, knocks down the three, can play off the ball screens, creates offense for himself and his teammates. Now all of a sudden, with the way they've been playing, and Tom Izzo's teams have a tendency to do that at this time of the year, all of a sudden it comes together for them.
Hey,
now they become very dangerous.
Did you just pick Sparty to win?
Say it again,
please. Did you just pick Sparty to win?
I did not pick Sparty to win, but I'm just saying that Sparty is one of those nine teams that can win it all,
right,
that legitimately can win it all.
You know, and Tom Izzo just always seems to be right on time at this time of the year. And right after he ripped Twitter, they went on this big run. That's just called coaching, Fonz. That's called coaching. He circled the wagon.
Circle the wagon.
Sparty's ready to roll. Last one from me. If you had to pick one team that's a dark horse that might slide in there, and that one team that Cinderella, we're looking at that Florida Gulf Coast type team, who would it be?
Yeah, I don't know if I have one down that low that could come from where Florida Gulf Coast did and make that run, or even recently like a UIC or Loyola of Chicago. But the team that's been my Final Four dark horse since the preseason has been Seton Hall. Now, Seton Hall has an elite scorer in Miles Powell, one of the best scorers in all of the country. Not only can he score it off the dribble and create his own offense, but he does a really nice job of moving without the basketball. Quincy McKnight, their point guard, 6'4", when Miles Powell was out. So they were missing Miles Powell for a couple of games because of concussion protocol. They were missing their second best player and best scorer, Sandro Mamos Kelesvili, with a wrist issue over about, I think it was six games for him. And now all of a sudden, other guys got a chance to really show what they could bring to the table. Jared Roden, who had been not banished necessarily, but had been on the bench and not playing as much as he's played in the past, now was getting an opportunity with those guys out. He produced, so now he's confident. Quincy McKnight had to share a bit more of the scoring role. Now he's playing at a higher level. So with that and their rim protection, with Romero Gill, one of the best shot blockers in the country, now all of a sudden you have a team that has very few weaknesses outside of their, sometimes they get stuck on the offensive end, that could legitimately win it as well.
And for all those Baylor fans, Baylor was
nice.
23 wins in a row, number one seed still. They're stumbling a little bit. Would you have concerns if you were a Baylor fan?
I have concerns because at this time of the year, it's important to have momentum going into the NCAA tournament. That's why I think this Big 12 tournament experience for Baylor is going to be vital for them. And think about it. This team was shooting at about 37% clip from the three-point line during the non-con season. And then all of a sudden, their offense just has not clicked on a consistent basis throughout the Big 12 regular season. And I think they've got to find that outside shot. We know their defense carries, but, you know, puts a lot of pressure on your defense if you can't consistently score the ball, especially with the great four guards that they have out there on the floor, led by Maceo Teague and Jared Butler. There's no reason why this team shouldn't be more efficient on the offensive end with the type of guard play that they have.
Are you going chalk in your Final Four?
I know, but we'll have to see how the bracket's set up, and then I'll make the decision from there. But usually I don't go chalk. I usually throw one in there. And again, Seton Hall will definitely be in there for me.
Right.
Kirk, we should be arrested for taking 172 episodes to get LaFonso Ellis.
Boy, no kidding. It's not going to take another 172.
LaFonso, you've ruined us for life. We're going to get you back on here sometime after the tournament. We're going to review everything. Man, we appreciate it so much. Taking time out of your schedule to visit with us. Thank you so much, sir.
It's my absolute pleasure. Thank you guys for having me on.
Thank you, Alfonso. Take care. Bye-bye.
Have a nice day. Bye.
On Second Thought.
Here's the interview with Texas softball coach Mike White. At the time of this interview, the Texas softball team was planning a trip to Tuscaloosa, Alabama to play in a classic, but that has since been canceled. But we thought we'd still bring you the interview in its entirety. Enjoy.
Kirk joining us online via phone. The illustrious head coach of the Texas softball team, Mike White, is joining us. The Horns getting ready to take a little road trip to Tuscaloosa. What is it called, Kirk? The T-Town Classic?
T-Town Showdown.
Wow, man, that sounds important. How are you, coach?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Man, it's good to have you back on with us, Mike. Your girls are just killing it, quite frankly. I mean, 24-3, number two in the nation, number one in one poll. I mean, congratulations. You guys are off to a great start, aren't y'all?
Well, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. Our offense has really been going pretty well this year, and the pitching's been doing chiming in pretty well. So hopefully we can keep it going.
I caught a couple of your games on the Longhorn Network, and this Miranda Ellis is really making a national name for herself in a program that's known for having some great pitching, namely one Kat Osterman, who's getting her number retired. What have you seen from Miranda, and how has she taken to this number one role and all the expectations that come with it as the lead pitcher for the University of Texas?
Yeah. Well, we try to look at, and it's easy to say but hard to do, is look at the expectations as a privilege. You know, it's a privilege to be ranked in the top five, and, we're loving it. We're just concentrating on playing better softball each time we go out. But Miranda is, she's in a level of her own right now, and, she's very focused. I think that last year's injury, was quite a shock to not only her but the team, and I think it gave her some time to look back on her career and maybe say, hey, this year's my year, and I'm going to try and give it everything I've got.
Well, she obviously rebounded well through a perfect game. She had one at Oregon as well, didn't she, Mike?
Yes, sir. Yeah, she pitched. Yeah, she had a couple no-hitters, I think.
And I know you double as the pitching coach as well. Have you seen any difference in her to even grow to a different level? And she was very good last year.
Yes. I think when she first came in, she was more of a thrower. And each year I've seen her progress into being more of a pitcher and understanding, it's not how hard we throw it. It's a combination of movement, location, and spin. And so she's always had a good velocity, but just her ability to move the ball around the zone, like pretty much you could always tell she was going to be a one-pitch pitcher. That's the drop ball, low in the zone. And now she's elevated her game to include the rise ball and the changeup. So it makes her that much more difficult to get away.
What is she going to do after the perfect game? I mean, you do that, it's hard to improve off of that.
Do it again.
Well, you do it again. That's exactly right. The game doesn't know your next game you go out there, but, just give it your best effort, and that's all she can do. Of course, we got some pretty tough competition coming up.
Yeah
definitely. This T-Town Showdown in Tuscaloosa, you get Bryant on Friday, followed by a nightcap against the number 10 Alabama Crimson Tide, Saturday BYU. Sunday you get Bryan in Alabama again. You've already beaten the national defending national champion UCLA Bruins, and then we got conference play starting up after this tournament. What have you seen that you'd like to see improved going into conference play? That something that still think that you could smooth out.
Well, I think as a coach, you're always looking for perfection, you know, and it's never good enough. But I feel like, you know, sometimes we just let some silly things happen. You know, we can make the outstanding play, and all of a sudden we'll make a bonehead play and not be heads up about what's going on, have that awareness about you, what the score is, where the runners are, and not giving the other team any more than they deserve. And then, you know, offensively, sometimes we throw some at-bats away. But, you know, again, it's very difficult. And, you know, you can't complain about a team that's batting over 400 as a team. So I think we're doing a good job so far.
So you're saying you throw some bats away. Cedric hitting 376 as a team, leads the nation. Yeah. And they hit 302 last year. So you're talking a monumental leap. And you have a new hitting coach in Steve Singleton. What has he brought, you think, that it's kind of helps transform this into a hitting machine?
Yeah, well, Steve comes from the Minnesota Twins, you know, minor league organization, and he'd worked a little bit with Florida State and their program, you know, as far as camps, and was really interested in getting into the fast pitch side. But he's bringing in a you know, just an approach that's very hands-on, you know, really talks about to the ladies about their mental approach, and they're not so much about physical, you know, not about mechanics. It's all about a mental approach and what are we looking for at this point in time and what adjustments are we going to make. And I just really like that about what he's doing.
You know, and he's come in, and there's been, I mean, it's nice to come in and inherit someone like a Janae Jefferson.
Well, awesome.
I mean, you've got 554 leading the team in hitting. And you got Lauren Burke slugging like over 800. Janae Jefferson, just a consistency about her that's got to scare the opposition to death. Is she the best player in the country? Because those conversations are definitely being had.
You know, it was kind of a surprise to me that she wasn't on the top 50 watch list.
That's just strange. That's really strange.
Yeah, two-time All-American as a freshman, sophomore. I mean, there's not too many of those to start with. And then for a kid that's, you know, leading a program, you know, with such a higher batting average, and then makes the outstanding plays in the field as well. I mean, maybe not so orthodox, you know, doesn't look pretty doing it sometimes, but she gets the job done, and I think she's very underrated. But, of course, when you're batting over 500, it's not going to happen much longer.
Well, so. I mean, you probably liked that when she got overlooked. That's kind of a coach's dream to have that great a player and have maybe a little chip on her shoulder, right?
Well, I don't know, but if you're overlooking her, you got a problem. So,
yeah, let everybody be aware of the problem.
A mental problem, yeah. For sure.
Well, Cedric mentioned the Alabama. This is this a revenge game? They were the one that took you guys out in the Super Regional last year. It cost you a trip to Oklahoma City. So, you know, are the girls interested in a little payback?
Well, I'm sure that's part of it, but, you know, we're just looking at, you know, we try not to play the name on the chest, but, of course, everyone knows, you know, it's, you know, how can you not, you know, but we used to make sure we play our game, and it's great to be out in another environment. There'll be 3,000 fans out there, and they'll be kind of pretty rabid, but, you know, we just want to make sure we give them our best game. We felt like we had a shot last year, and we didn't play our last game, and it really counted. Right. Our best game, and it really counted. And we got to make sure we do that this time. You know, that team, they may be ranked 10th now, but they were ranked number one coming into the season.
So what happened to them? Have they had some losses unexpected or injuries, or what do you think happened to them so far?
Yeah, well, Hemphill, their main slugger from last year, hit over 20 home runs, and she's had two so far, touch wood. You know, and I think they've just had, you know, some senior leadership change over, and you know, sometimes that can take a toll.
Yeah,
you got those leaders out there, and so I think they're still finding their footing. They're playing better lately, you know, so they're kind of like a sleeping bear right now, and we don't want to wake them up too much. So hopefully, we can sneak in a couple of wins against them.
You know, Mike, I know you mentioned 3,000 fans going to be there, and I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but, man, this coronavirus thing is just the biggest story in the world right now, and not everybody's traveling. You guys are taking a nice road trip to Tuscaloosa, and the city of Austin has banned events of more than 2,500 attendees, you know, unless the venue can prove that they're ready to confront this thing. I know University of Texas is a state institution, and it doesn't apply to them. But what precautions have you guys had to take, knowing that you're about to put these young women on a plane and head to Tuscaloosa with the uncertainty of that coronavirus in the air?
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Yeah, we got to be cautious about that. And, you know, we're putting our trust in those above us that make the decisions. And you'll all abide by anything that they decide to do. But, you know, just precautionary measures such as, you know, making sure we're washing our hands. And, you know, if someone has a cold, and we stay away from the rest of us. And, you know, just really look out and be on the lookout for those things. Make sure that, you know, when you're eating and, you know, taking drinks out of coolers, that you're always washing your hands. So that's all we can do right now until probably get some more information on it.
Absolutely. But how do you keep that from being an elephant in the room? When you guys got business to take care of, you're trying to get back to Oklahoma City. How do you make that not be such a big deal and try to keep the emphasis on softball?
Well, I think some of that is the uncontrollables, you know. I mean, I suppose we could control it by not doing it, but, we don't know the extent of it for, you know, obviously there's a lot of people that are sick and some people are dying. You know, we just got to be cautionary about it and, you know, just continue to go forward. And, you know, hopefully, you know, nothing will happen. You know, but we got to make sure we're cognizant of what's going on around us.
Do y'all still participate in post-game handshakes with the other team, Mike?
We have. It's just a slap of the hand, typically. But, yeah, I mean, the first time I ran into the bump thing was last week. And, you know, and it kind of makes some sense,
right.
You know. So we got to be aware of that as well. You know, this certainly is a scary time right now. And, you know, a lot of it's unknown. But, like I said, some of it is uncontrollables. We just got to deal with them.
Man, I hate that elbow bump, but I've been doing it, Mike. I don't.
Yeah.
I guess we don't have a choice, bro. We have to do what we have to do. But, and, you know, the essence of sports is high fives and fist bumps and hugs and chest bumps. It's emotional and it's familial and it's communal. So it's everything that this virus is against. But I know you guys will be fine. It's going to be a fun road trip. The Oklahoma coming up, knowing how big that series is, How much of a motivation is it for you guys to go into Tuscaloosa and kick some butt, knowing that some money games are getting ready to start?
Well, yeah, that's part of the reason for us having the schedule we've had so far. It's been my belief all along that if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best, and you may take some lumps along the way. You know, coming out of that gauntlet of road trip where we lost two games, I think, against Yale and one against Fresno State. I mean, if you told me we came out with two losses, I'd been really happy. So, you know, the question becomes, are we getting better from facing this tough competition? We've got to be aware that we're not wearing people out. I threw Miranda Ellis quite a lot that week, and I certainly don't want to wear her out. We've got some big games coming up, but everything's trying to be prepared to try and win our conference. We want to be a contender for this conference this year. We want to give it our best shot this year.
Well, and you've got some pitching depth in Shale Leary and the freshman Courtney Day. What do they give you in terms of depth?
Shea is just she throws gas. You know, she's 6'2". She's pretty intimidating out there on the pitching mound and puts the shades on, so you don't quite know where it's going. You know? Kind of got the major league scare going, but
I like that.
You know, we were also trying to develop her pitching, too, but, you know, she is what she is right now. She's a hard thrower, and she just has to control her pitches and, you know, work around the zone as much as she can. But Courtney Day has been a great get for us. She's been able to come in and really still, quell the tide of the other team's offense quite a bit. And, I don't see her as a full-time starter against the best competition.
Mm-hmm.
But she's certainly someone we can bring in to probably quiet some bats.
And you're building for the future, too. I had one other question on the virus thing. You know, they've talked about empty arenas for the NCAA basketball tournament. If they had that and went to that, or they had you guys playing in empty ballparks, empty stadiums, how do you think that would affect the game and the athletes' play?
Well, it's that's the fun part of the game, is playing in front of a lot of people. But, as an athlete at the top level, you really kind of feel like no one's there anyway when you're in the zone or you're
mm-hmm.
focused.
Right.
So it doesn't really matter. You're more intent. Like, I know when I'm coaching, I'll look around, but I don't really feel the crowd. I just feel the game. So I think that's what you got to focus on, you know, the game as itself as it's played. But, you know, I think if we get to that stage, then I would say that travel might be banned too.
True.
If we're going to go that far, we need to, you know, because that's one of the we'll know airports are not the greatest place for
that's a good,
hygiene.
Good place to avoid, for sure. The one last thing I have for you, you just got your 500th career win. You beat Michigan. Congratulations on that. And you just taken this program to phenomenal, you know, strides after just, you know, not even a year and a half, you know, not even half over here. So I was curious, have you hit Chris Del Conte up for a raise yet?
No, I'm thankful for what I have right now, but I'm blessed. You know, I'm blessed that obviously the players can make you look good or bad. And, you know, they've bought into a system, they've bought into some changes, you know, and they haven't been easy at times, but, you know, I just continue to keep going forward and play each year, you know, one at a time. Like I said, I don't feel like I work. I feel like I'm competing and and having fun on it.
Well, you clearly need me and Seth as your agents. Okay?
Well, actually, Mike, Kirk and I hit Del Conte up for a raise, and we don't even work there. Just in case he wanted to cut a check.
You never know. You never know.
I'm always looking for some CDC love. Hey, man, go ahead.
If he called me, I would not say no.
There you go. We'll put that out there when we run into him. So, Mike, appreciate you being on. Like I said, congratulations on this great start, and it's a super run. Hope you guys continue and have a great success down in Alabama this weekend.
I really appreciate it, and thanks to all our fans that are supporting us and filling that place up. Welcome.
Take care, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye-bye.
On Second Thought.
Doug, I like him.
Yeah, he is. He's personable, and he gets results, so it's very impressive.
That will do it for episode 172 of On Second Thought. We've got to thank ESPN analyst LaFonso Ellis and Texas softball coach Mike White for joining us. For Kirk Bowles, I'm Cedric Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.